Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, December 6, 2010. Tech News Today is brought to you by Ford and voice-activated Sync, featuring true hands-free calling, turn-by-turn directions, 911 assistant. More available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. And by Gazelle, the easy way to sell or recycle the used gadgets lying around your home or office. Don't just sell it, Gazelle it! For a 5% bonus payment for your used gadgets, go to gazelle.com, bonus code TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Jason Howell.
Everyone else is in Paris. At the web. It was rat
Sounds like
bastards.
A horrible life.
Well, actually, Darren
Jerks.
Kitchen is off working on his Hack 5 show, so he's not with us today. Sarah Lane is in Paris. Leo's in Paris. But we found two people in the world
that were suckers enough to come on the show
and aren't in Paris. First of all, Mr. Randall Bennett, thank you for helping us fill out. VidPlusPlus.com is your latest venture?
Yeah, right now it's a blog about digital video and trying to push video forward. More stuff to come, though.
All right.
Ooh, ominous.
And returning to the show as well, Randall's been on the show before, and also Ayaz Akhtar, now from PCMag.com. On the video version, you can see his big PCMag Lab sign.
Yeah, that's right. It's propped up on a chair, and if it falls off, I'm going to get in a lot of trouble.
I want you to thank Lance for allowing you out of your cage.
I'd like to thank everyone at PCMag for letting me set up and loan me all this equipment.
Yes. Here, have a bunch of monitors.
There's some great CRT monitors.
There's dime a dozen at PC Mag.
All right. Well, I have a soft spot in my heart for PC Mag because I was once in the same building as them back in the old ZD days when I was at ZDTV. So, all right, let's start off with the Google Nexus X. Gets an announcement. The Nexus S is real. It will be on sale December 16th in the United States at a Best Buy near you. And December 20th in the United Kingdom at a Carphone warehouse near you. Don't have pricing on the UK version yet, but it'll be $199 on T-Mobile in the US, or you can buy it $529 unlocked. It's basically built on the Samsung Galaxy S. That's the body of the phone. Comes with Gingerbread, or will come with Gingerbread. That's Android 2.3. 4-inch contour display. 1 gigahertz Cortex A8 based Hummingbird processor. So the processor's not all great shakes, but it's okay. Front and rear camera. One of them is 5 megapixel. I think it's the front camera. 16 gigabytes of internal memory. Actually, it's probably the rear camera that's 5 megapixels. 16 gigabytes of internal memory. A gyroscope. Near field communication chip, so you can do that little swipe and pay stuff. And it's tri-band HSPA with AWS. No HSPA Plus, and doesn't have the 3G bands you need to run it on AT&T, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, I think for this phone specifically, T-Mobile's really bolstering their Android lineup. Of course, they came out the original G1 back in the day, the G2, this now. To me, like, the more the merrier at this point with Android, right? It's NFC to me is the big story here. Not today, of course. We're not, you know, there's not a lot of NFC readers everywhere. And Gingerbread, just the SDK just shipped today. But once NFC starts to roll out, I'm sure this will be the flagship device for people looking to try out those credit card destroyers.
Yeah, I think the NFC, someone said in the chat room, and I think this is right, that it can only read for now, but that'll change. Eventually. And as you mentioned, the Gingerbread 2.3 SDK came out today with support for NFC. New keyboard and text selection tool, improved copy-paste, gyroscope support, which there's a gyroscope in the Nexus S, so that makes sense. Support some other new sensors as well. And VoIP SIP support. So you could actually just use this thing on the data network to make calls. You wouldn't even have to use the T-Mobile voice network.
Yeah, I'm really interested in this because, I mean, when Google came out with the Nexus One, the original one, it was kind of underpowered. And all the phones that came out subsequently from like Motorola and everybody else, they really stepped it up. So if this is the new baseline, I mean, this has a lot of cool features. I mean, I can't wait to see what everybody else is going to do based on this as the lowest standard.
And that gyroscope too, the, you know, having more accurate sensing for things like gaming. Obviously, the iPhone 4 has a gyroscope as well. Previously to this, it was accelerometers, which if you're a big nerd, it's two-dimensional versus three-dimensional. So games could take advantage of this. And there's, you know, I think, yeah, like Aya says, if this sets the baseline, hopefully we'll see even better devices next year.
Now, the unlocked version you would be able to use on AT&T's voice network, but is there any other reason to get unlocked other than just to avoid the contract? Because
you could just use it like an iPod Touch for $529. It's not too bad getting an Android device that has the app marketplace.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really not that. It's got 16 gigabytes of built-in space, so why not?
I guess if you just really hate contracts.
I hate contracts. I have a MiFi, so I'll just hook it up with that.
Exactly. I don't know. I don't think unsubsidized phones work in the U.S., so I think it's more just they're putting it out there, see if anyone does it. No one's going to do it.
Seems like there were two main reactions to this. Some people just started drooling, my wife included, and said, I want that. I want to buy that right now that is going to be my Android phone. Other people looked at it and said, 1 gigahertz processor, it's just a Galaxy S with, you know, vanilla Android, not impressed.
I mean, the vanilla Android is big, though, especially for developers. Like, developers tend to prefer, you know, having the latest builds of OSs. And, you know, the Nexus S theoretically should allow them to continuously update their devices. So if you're an early adopter, that's a big plus in itself.
Were you a drooler or a shrugger, Randall?
You know, I'm somewhere in between. I'm going to keep the iPhone 4 for a long time just because I feel like I spent the money. I don't want to. I'm trying to break the cycle of continuously upgrading devices.
Yeah.
So I'm somewhere. I think it's a strong device, right? I don't think it's a weak device by any stretch of the imagination. I don't, however, think it was as strong as the Nexus One when it was first announced, because the Nexus One really pushed people a lot further. Where this is sort of like the. I mean, there are those pieces that make it a little bit better than current Android devices, and especially compared to the Galaxy S. It's, you know, it's marginally better than the Galaxy S, I would say.
Yeah, but it looks so much like most of the other Galaxy S phones. I mean, they all have that kind of semi-plasticky look. Yeah. Obviously, yeah. So. But I don't know if it totally sets itself apart from the S line.
Are you shrugging?
I'm actually kind of with Randall. If it was on Verizon, I would be all over it. But just because there is no front-facing camera Android phone on Verizon right now.
That was the thing that got Eileen excited, is it has a front-facing camera. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is strange for me to have that be a tipping point, but it is.
Is that really that big of a deal, though? I mean, do you guys use FaceTime? I don't ever use FaceTime. I don't ever call anyone FaceTime. No one asks to call me on FaceTime.
Yeah.
How are you even going to use the front-facing camera?
You know what it is for me at this point? It's like, it's kind of like you said, you don't want to have to upgrade your phone all the time. So if the next phone I get, I want it to be completely up to date with what is out there. And front-facing camera seems to be kind of a general theme. If I don't have it in my next phone and suddenly there are all these great uses for it down the line, I'm missing out on that. And then I have to upgrade.
I asked drool or shrug.
I think I drooled, then I shrugged. Because I saw it, I was like, this is really cool. This
Pick
could be
a
great
side,
instead of reading. I eventually just shrugged at it because I was really disappointed in the display. I was hoping it was going to be something better than the iPhone. It's just WVGA. I was hoping for, you know, maybe double HD cameras, and you don't have that. So I guess a shrug.
All right. The first Nexus got exactly that reaction. Lots of drooling at first, and then people started to shrug, and they ended up having to retire.
Maybe we're just never happy.
Maybe
we're impossible to satisfy.
You're never happy. You people who like technology, you're never happy.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Google also, Google's trying to dominate the news cycle, because we'll talk about it in calendar, but they've got their big announcement about Chrome OS tomorrow. Google eBooks went live today. You can get it at books.google.com/ebooks. You can buy or download for free millions of books. And what they're doing is pretty smart. It's not just web-based like we heard. It is that. Once you buy a book from the Google eBook store, you can read it in any browser on any device. But they also have some apps available. In fact, here's the iPad app. I've got it right here, and you can see it looks kind of similar to other ebook apps that you've seen. You can download the books from the store in your browser, like the Safari browser, and then you just open up the book. Let's see. I'm make sure I got one that works here. None of them are working. Oh, that's because
I'm crashing. There we go.
It was because I was gripping it at the same time. And then I don't understand why they have to do this stupid page animation flip.
I mean, people love that on iBooks, though.
It's the first time it happens, like, oh, that's nifty, and then it just gets annoying. I just want
to
be able
to... Can you control the speed of the flip, like on the iBooks?
I don't know about that. I haven't checked into the
settings. And if you got rid of the page turn, would that actually speed the page turn. You know, would that actually take you to the next page faster?
It distracts me. It takes me out of the
story. And I think the whole thing with Google Books is it's sort of a solution in search of a problem. I mean, out of like places to buy ebooks, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, ebooks.com. There's so many, I mean, and like, not to mention all the Adobe Digital Editions affiliates. Like, there's not a, it's not like there's a dearth of places to pick up an ebook. I think Google is probably doing this for some other structural reason that we don't know yet. But like, I can already do all of these things using Kindle. I have no reason.
But can you take a book you bought on Kindle and read it on a Sony e-reader?
Okay, I guess the thing that I do, typically if I'm buying books, if I am picking up a book that I want to read multiple places, I usually buy it from, well, they're normally O'Reilly books, so I buy a lot of O'Reilly books, and I'll just buy like the PDF version of that, and then all other books I just buy on Kindle. So we actually have a Sony e-reader that my wife tends to use, and she just checks out books from libraries. A lot of digital libraries have the book checkout feature, which isn't replicated anywhere else since no one else supports Adobe DRM. But that being said,
Google supports the Adobe DRM, and actually the Nook supports the Adobe DRM. So that's the key here. I think what Google's doing is very smart, saying we're going to take a page from Amazon Video and allow you to read your book on any browser, anywhere, anytime. So that expands us to a bunch of devices immediately. Then we're also going to make it available for download so that you can put it on any device that supports the Adobe DRM. And the Kindle is one of the few who does it.
So you can put Adobe. So if I bought a book from somewhere else, could I read it in the Google Books app, or is that not the case? Do we know that currently?
That's a good question. I think any EPUB book or any Adobe DRM EPUB would work in the app.
Yeah,
conceivably. I don't know how you'd get it into the app.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's maybe the one piece of the pie here that's a solution. I think for the minority of people who don't currently, I mean, if you're buying eBooks. Like, where are you buying from them? You're buying them from Amazon. I mean, for the most part. I think, like, the portability argument, that is its feather and its cap, but it's still not enough to me.
This just made not buying them from Amazon contemplatable if you're somebody who's living in the Amazon environment already.
Sure.
Because the Kindle is available on so many devices. I don't actually use a Kindle anymore. I just buy my Kindle books and read them on other devices. Yeah. And so I won't lose anything if I buy a Google edition because I can read them on those same devices. Yeah. James McQuivy over at Paid Content suggests that maybe this will lead to advertising-supported books because when you can read it on all these different devices in all these different ways, and it's most of the situations are involved in a connected situation, you can update ads. You can change ads around. So that is sort of an interesting look at this.
Yeah, definitely.
Iaz, you excited about the books?
Sort of. I mean, like, I'm getting a little bit fed up with having to remember where my book is in what app, because they're always organized by that way, right? So if I have a Kindle app, I have to make sure I'm remembering which ones are with the Kindle store. And now with the Google one, I have to worry about that. And then there's the Barnes & Noble thing. So I would wish there was like a hyper manager, something above everything saying, look, you can read everything on this, because I don't want my library on different.
There is. It's apps. Called Google. They're the hyper manager of the entire internet now.
Nice. Well, they need a search, I guess. I guess I have to search for everything on the iPad then. Like, which book is in which app? I just find that annoying.
iOS 4.3 to arrive on Thursday, and the rumor is it will support subscription-based apps, or at least that's what's kicking around. Although on Slashdot, they point to a Peter Kafka article on All Things Digital that says the publishers are still not settled with Apple over the terms of that kind of a deal. Publishers don't like the 30% cut that Apple wants to take, first of all, and they want access to credit card and personal data that they would get through a normal print subscription, because that kind of demographic data helps them sell ads in the magazine, and they want to offer these sort of print and app combination subscription situations.
Yeah,
Does anyone find it funny that iOS 4.3 could come out at all after 4.2 took forever for the iPad?
Like, it could come out rapidly versioning.
Well, I think it's going to be a much smaller update. I think that's why. There was a story I read a few weeks ago that said there were delays in 4.2 for various reasons, but the work on 4.3 kept going, and that's why they're going to have them so close together. It is unusual.
For sure. I think with the subscription data, there's sort of a middle ground. I mean, obviously the publishers want this. I want this as a video producer. How great would it be if you could have people subscribe to your video show? But on top of that, Apple's going to get what it wants. It has all the leverage. The publishers don't have any leverage. It's going to put out this technology, and they could just say, hey, publishers, if you want to use this, this technology is available. We don't really need to cater to you as much.
4.3 could get delayed by the publishers, conceivably, if they don't agree to this, and that's the only reason to put it out.
Yeah, even still, though, they delay it because publishers don't want to use it. Maybe they release it into the development channel only, right? So you give non-Ziff Davis or whoever's the publisher, I can't even think of any, but you give them people who aren't them access, and more people start using the subscription thing. Eventually, the publishers cave. I just don't think in a situation like this, publishers have very much leverage with which to, determine how Apple runs things.
So I might disagree with you on that, because next year we're going to see a ton of tablets. Everyone's announced their stuff. We're going to see things in 2011. So maybe Apple doesn't have the leverage they normally do in this kind of situation. They might be dominant, but like within 3 months, we're going to see, or 4 months, we'll probably see the BlackBerry. What is it called?
Playbook?
Playbook. Thank you. The Playbook. You're going to see all these other options out there. So maybe they just can't keep playing hardball with these guys.
I mean, I think they can play hardball today. You might be right in 3 or 4 months. But as it stands right now, they either need to get in line Apple could release the software update regardless of whether publishers are on board or not. I mean, I guess I'm not Peter Kafka, but that's what I think. So
I know Peter. I actually don't know Peter Kafka, so I can't use that. All right, let's take a quick break and thank Ford, makers of voice-activated sync, for helping to bring tech news today to you. If you are tempted to use your phone to make calls or send text messages or mess around with your podcast lineup or your list of music while you're driving, there's a safer way to do that than to fall for temptation. It's voice-activated sync, true hands-free calling. You just speak whatever it is you want. You want to call Jason, you say, call Jason. You want to skip a skip a song, you skip a song. So that's how it works. You say, call Jason. All of a sudden, Jason picks up
the phone.
Where
are you calling from? Your car? Yeah. That's amazing.
What is this, the 80s? Weird.
Turn-by-turn directions, 911 assist, and more sync is available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles, and it listens to your voice and connects to your phone via Bluetooth. Most phones, you just walk in the car, and it connects right away. Music and podcast search, you say, search for IaaS podcasts. Pulls up all the podcasts IaaS has been up, if they're properly tagged with metadata. If you'd like, you might want to check it out. It's the 2012 Ford Focus Global Test Drive is going on right now, so you can go try out Ford Sync and the Ford Focus, and you could actually enter the contest to win a sneak peek at the Ford Focus. It's running now through December 31st, 2010. Tell us why Ford should donate $10,000 to a charity of your choice. Upload that video at twitfordfocus.com, and by December 31st, we will pick a lucky winner to be flown to Madrid to the Spain's National Institute for Aerospace Technology to test drive a Ford Focus on the Institute for Aerospace Technology. So a trip to Madrid, trip to the Institute for Aerospace Technology, and a free Ford Focus test drive. Check it out, twitfordfocus.com. We thank Ford for their support. Apple, we already did that story. Let's move on to WikiLeaks.
It's a great company.
We already did that story too. WikiLeaks. We need a WikiLeaks sound effect.
Yeah, we need some sort of dramatic music. I was going to get the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire bed. Maybe if I could find it, just go for it. We'll see what I do.
All right. Like a leaky, like a drippy thing.
Yeah,
like a drip sound. It's just constant leaking.
It is. It's just a sieve. Here are the WikiLeaks stories today. The WikiLeaks mirrors continue to multiply. Although the main funding source for WikiLeaks has been cut off, their bank account in Switzerland has been frozen, allegedly because Julian Assange used an incorrect address. He did not use his actual residence when he signed up for the account. He used his lawyer's address. So they're saying that's not okay. We're getting rid of that.
I heard that it's not frozen, though. He's going to get the cash back. That'll just have to move it somewhere else.
It's temporarily frozen, maybe.
Exactly.
That would make sense. Anonymous attacks against PayPal have been threatened by Operation Avenge Assange, which is the Anonymous group, the folks who went after Scientology. They're going to go after PayPal now. An arrest warrant for Julian Assange arrived in the UK, and that is where he is believed to be, in London. This is related to the charges of sexual assault that originated in Sweden. And there's some questions as why WikiLeaks is not trending on Twitter. Twitter says that it the way the trending algorithm works, WikiLeaks has been talked about for so long, it's not a trending topic. It's not gaining anything. It's just continuing. Other people say that Twitter is in on it. They're in on the conspiracy. They're trying to keep WikiLeaks down. And one of the actual WikiLeaks says that Intel strong-armed Russian officials to allow them to bring in encrypted devices to use in Intel plants that normally would be restricted by threatening to lay off all the Intel employees in Russia if they didn't let them do it.
Classy.
So I don't know. Which one you want to pick? Do you care?
I pick Twitter. I mean, that makes sense, right? Like, the fact that this has been going on for a while, Time's talking about making Julian Assange person of the year. You know, of course the Twitter algorithm is going to say this is not a trend anymore. This just is.
I don't think there's anything going on. Although it's you know, it's that time in the WikiLeaks story arc where everything is going to appear to be a conspiracy.
Exactly. Theory. I'm waiting for the Will Smith movie. It's got to be around the corner, right?
We can insert a virus into WikiLeaks and shut them down. I think that's been tried, actually, many times.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, the WikiLeaks story to me is one of those entertaining, it's an entertaining topic that will continue to pop up simply because, like us, losing some of our privacy through things like Facebook and Twitter, now governments are suffering some of the same exact problems that we are. They're having, you know, all of their information be leaked. Clay Shirky wrote an interesting piece earlier today, and he said basically he has some sort of dissonance with how WikiLeaks is proceeding. He thinks that the idea that, you know, anyone wants to get around the law, of course, is awful and abhorrent, and those pieces should be leaked. But diplomats who are doing their jobs, I mean, there's an innate human tendency to want to be able to have some elbow room so that you can be thinking about things before you say them publicly. I mean, to me, like, that's sort of the essence of this case, and I think that's why it continues to be such a big topic everywhere.
And he sort of implied that the time of diplomacy is over, that we really don't, in a world in which we can have instant communications by telephone and email, there's not a need to have ambassadorships. And so, of course, those arms are going to continue as sort of as espionage agencies. Yeah. And we shouldn't be surprised by that.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a crazy story. I mean, the more the merrier, I say. This is one of those things that's not going to go away for a while. I mean, Twitter conspiracy theorists, sorry.
Mark Zuckerberg appeared on 60 Minutes yesterday in an interview with Leslie Stahl. It was a long interview, over 17, 18 minutes long. They actually talked to the Winklevosses as well, mm-hmm. the famous twins.
The Rowers, that's what I call them.
Zuckerberg did very well. He's obviously starting to get a little media savvy. He talked about the movie, The Social Network. He talked about the new Facebook profiles that have been rolled out. These are a cleaner design, more image-centric. Your photos are up at the top. All of your important information is up at the top. You've got the ability to see your interests displayed graphically. So if you're into sports, for instance, and you're into the St. Louis Blues, a Blues logo would show up, that kind of thing. I guess Mark Zuckerberg is a fan of Lady Gaga, I found. By looking at his profile.
Who knew?
I didn't know that, so I've learned
He's
something.
He's following her on Twitter.
Have you guys, and here's the big thing. You can opt in to the profile. Unlike every other change that Facebook has made where they forced it upon you and then got everyone upset and a Facebook group was started to protest it, this time they're like, look, we're going to roll it out slowly. You want it? Go to facebook.com/about/profile. And go down to the bottom and click the link to opt in.
I opted in this morning. I quite liked it. I mean, it kind of reminds me a little bit, this is going to sound odd, like Google Profiles. On the top there, that the little photo bar looks kind of neat. And it kind of reminds me of LinkedIn at the same time with all that, a quick paragraph of your relationships, where you work, all that stuff right there. So, like, it's a lot more friendly than just staring at this long list of who knows what, you know?
And also, the folks at PC World pointed out that it increases quite a bit the space for ads on the right side.
Hey,
figure.
So it's you know, it's not all bad for everything. You opted in, Ayaz. What about you, Randall? Did you opt in?
Yeah, I opted in earlier today, and actually, I was talking to an instructor from a school I used to go to, and she had IM'd me, and she was like, "Hey, your profile looks so cool. How do I do that?" So I think this time we're seeing the ability to opt in is obviously a huge win for Facebook, actually listening to users, and you know, I've particularly liked most of the changes they've made. I've never complained about most of them. But for users that aren't used to change, giving someone the simple ability to click opt-in is a huge a way to stop all that controversy before it starts. And I think a lot of, you know, eventually they'll switch over everyone. But by the time they switch over everyone, most people will be used to seeing profiles anyway this way. So, you know, you'll maybe get 1,000 people in the group that says, well, bring the old Facebook back instead of, you know, a million.
Yeah.
It's probably also worth mentioning, and you guys talked about this on Twit yesterday, that it's a one-way deal, right? Once you opt in,
there is no going backwards.
Yeah. So be sure you want it.
Yeah.
Another video has leaked of the PlayStation phone, but this is much better than the blurry Greek one that we saw last week. This one, you actually see the phone head on. And you can actually see that it's running Gingerbread. You can see the controls. They slide out from the bottom, the little PlayStation controls. You can see it. Some of the stuff is blurred out, but they show you the baseband version and the Android version to confirm it. What do you guys think? I mean, this is our second look at a rumored PlayStation phone. I like the idea of a PlayStation phone, but watching this thing, that does not raise the gadget lust in me.
Yeah.
What's the deal with those, you know, where the thumb pads would usually be? Is that like optical track pads, or is that, I mean, that seems very odd to me. If you're trying to play an analog game, those two little dots don't exactly lend themselves to analog control.
I think those are your control sticks, your joysticks.
Yeah.
And essentially they're touch sensitive. I've seen this before on other devices, and the little knob lets you know where the center is so that you can swing around it. And it looks like it wouldn't work, but it works better than you might think.
Yeah,
you're right. I mean, not everybody's going to like that, though.
That's definitely going to be one of those hands-on. You also try it compared to, the PSP or whatever. I think the best part is, though, they had the forethought of actually making it work like a phone. I mean, remember Nokia with the side-talking taco? That was a classic blunder.
All you do to load your games is take the battery out.
Exactly. I mean, obviously, mobile networks are a lot better today. Engage, Nokia's platform, actually had a shot if they would have stuck with it and done some things structurally different. However, like PlayStation, hello, it's the pedigree of video games at this point. PS3 notwithstanding, people are used to the PlayStation brand as a gaming-centric device, and especially since the iPhone's being used so heavily for gaming, to me it's natural. Now, hopefully Sony Ericsson can just pull it off, though.
All right, Ayaz Akhtar, I know you like to write libelous things about me. Actually, that's slander because it's not true. But if I were to write slanderous or I guess I can't write slanderous things. If I were to write libelous things about you and publish them on the internet and then Randall were to link to them, do you think Randall would be culpable?
Maybe in Canada.
Ah, you've read the story.
That's right. I'm prepared for the program.
John Newton from Vancouver is going to the Canadian Supreme Court to defend the right to link to stuff. He's won both of his previous cases, but they've been appealed every time. And the thing going on here is Wayne Crooks, the owner of West Coast Title Search Limited, was libeled. It was shown in court that he was libeled by someone else. However, in describing the story about this, John Newton linked to one of the stories that was considered libelous. Now, Wayne Crooks is going after Newton, saying linking to the story is libelous. And here are the two sides of the story. Newton says it's like a card catalog. This is what he told the court. You know, a card catalog referring to a book that would be libelous would not be libelous itself. It just tells you where the book is. That's what a link is. Crooks is trying to say, it would only make sense if the book was stapled to the back of the card in the card catalog. Because the link is so easy to use that it just takes you right there. He's trying to argue that the content of that page is embedded in the link because it's so easy to get to it.
There's way better arguments than that. I don't know. Sorry, I cut you off again. I'm so good at that today.
Yeah, I think this is completely idiotic. There's no way. I mean, you basically break the entire internet if you allow this kind of... you're basically saying that you're integrating the entire contents of what you've linked to. That's insane. That's absolutely insane. What if you have a typo in there? Do you tacitly agree to something like that by accident? Can you even do that? This is ridiculous.
It's people who don't understand the fundamental concepts of the internet arguing about the internet. I mean, to me, there's an argument to be said that if you link to something, it's amplifying the libel, so you have some responsibility there, right? Like, there's somewhat of a maybe road you could go down. But to just say that, oh, this person linked to them, therefore they automatically have, you know, stapled the book onto the card catalog. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
It would break the internet in Canada if Newton loses this case. I mean, Ars Technica points that out, and they're absolutely right. Actually, Newton pointed it out.
It's like the deep linking arguments back when the internet was first around, you know, 1998, I think there was some of these arguments that, oh, you're not allowed to link to this part of my website, only to the homepage, because then I'm losing all this traffic that I would normally get if you don't go through my homepage. I mean, it's just ridiculous. You don't need to have a contract to link to someone. It's insane to me.
All right, let's take another break and thank our other sponsor, Gazelle. They are sellers of used goods. And you provide the goods and you get paid for it. Latest smartphones, MP3 players, laptops, gaming consoles, whatever you've got lying around the house, you can sell it to Gazelle and they will give you money for it. And it's really easy. That's the beauty of using Gazelle. You might think, oh, why would I use Gazelle for this? The reason you use it for Gazelle is, here's how it works. You take your old, you take this old iPad. I got to get rid of this thing, so old. There's playbooks now and Galaxy Tabs. I'm going to get rid of this iPad. I go on to Gazelle.com. I describe the iPad, what condition it's in. And within seconds, it gives me back an amount that it's going to give me for that iPad. I can print out a mailing label right then and send it to them. Or I can actually have them send me a box. If I'm that lazy, which I have been, and then you take the box to the post office, drop it off, doesn't cost you anything to mail it, they send you a check. In fact, they can send you it in lots of different ways. They can get it as an Amazon gift certificate, a Walmart gift card, PayPal, check. You can ask Gazelle to donate the value of your gadget to charity, and you get a 5% bonus on the amount if you use the code TNT. Kindles or Nooks and other ebook readers are going for about $100 these days. iPhones have run from around $200. MacBooks around $600. If you need a little extra cash for the holidays, check them out, gazelle.com, and use the offer code TNT. Time now for the news views. The January 2011 issue of Consumer Reports is out, and it rates cell phones and plans and beats up on AT&T. AT&T got the magazine's full black dot rating. That's the lowest they give. They got it in almost every nationwide category. Verizon topped the rankings, and oddly, the iPhone, which Consumer Reports refused to recommend during the AntennaGate problem back in the summer, tops their list of phones for AT&T. On to you, Iaz.
I know, the train startled me there. Buried deep in the fine print on iPhone placards in Apple stores, sharp-eyed 9to5Mac.com found confirmation from Apple that the white iPhone, the unicorn of iPhones, will arrive in spring 2011. This backs up what Apple said in late October when they indicated the white iPhone would come in the spring. That'll teach Apple to put anything in writing, no matter how small.
Because we will notice. The bloggers will notice. Analyst Sha Wu, who is known for some fairly bold predictions and scoops, now claims Verizon is pushing for exclusivity on the iPhone. Not exactly what you'd think, though. AT&T would still have the iPhone, but Verizon wants to make sure that nobody else gets it. No T-Mobiles, no Sprints, no other carriers would get the iPhone. And Wu speculates that Verizon is willing to fork over some money as part of the deal, which would help keep the margins high for Apple.
In what appears to be an effort to help persuade the big networks to stop blocking Google TV, Google says that it's bought DRM software outfit Widevine. Google said it plans to fold Widevine's DRM technology, digital rights management, of course, into its own projects, presumably Google TV. Widevine is used most often in TVs, and its clients include Best Buy, Love Film, and Netflix.
Oh, so Google now owns the DRM technology for Netflix.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Fancy.
Wall Street Journal reports more streaming boxes on the way. On Live, the cloud gaming startup we've talked about before on Tech News Today, apparently will offer up a subscription-based movie streaming service sometime next year, while HDTV maker Vizio is considering doing the same thing. As Netflix starts to get that sort of iTunes-dominant feel, the movie industry really wants more companies to get into this space and provide other opportunities to stream their movies.
More non-news on the India blocking BlackBerry front.
Thank goodness.
Home Secretary G.K. Pillai downplayed reports that the Indian government plans to block access to the BlackBerry service, saying that the January deadline was more of a target rather than a hard deadline. Meanwhile, RIM said blocking BlackBerry would mean all similar services would need to be blocked, like Skype.
They actually said Skype, too. That was hilarious. Reuters reports today that the secret voices in their head say AOL is actively exploring a breakup of the company in a complicated series of transactions that may lead to a merger with Yahoo. One scenario has the dial-up business sold to Earthlink, while the content arm goes to Yahoo. Another has Centaurs taking the helm and flying AOL into a merry planet of wonders.
Yay, wonders.
Actually, Reuters didn't report the Centaur part. That was my own.
That's fun. El Economista, the Economist, a.k.a., reports that renowned British architect Norman Foster is working on a secret underground city for Apple. It's actually a new Apple campus referred to in plans as Apple City, but it does have underground tunnels, futuristic shuttles, and it connects to the current Apple campus, which means the Mac maker is rapidly outgrowing it.
Yeah, the 9to5Mac.com has some illustrations there that look pretty crazy. Those little tiny shuttles and stuff.
All right, they've done a bunch of stuff in other countries as well.
Yeah, let's finish up with an app that will slow you down, called Slow. Is it called Slow Down? Yeah, it's called Slow Down. It's a Belgian app, so I'm not sure if you can get it anywhere else yet. But it's brought to you by the Belgian organization OVK. Which stands in the language they speak there, which I believe is French. Parents of children killed in road accidents. Has a very simple idea. If you drive too fast, it slows down your music to give you an audio cue that you've exceeded the speed limit.
More than 10 kilometers per hour, the music stops completely.
Oh!
Until you're driving within the speed limit again.
And then it starts back up. And then it gets fast when you get under the speed limit. So there you go. I don't know if that's such a great idea or not. What do you guys think?
I'm down for it. I've always said GPS apps, they're the ones, they need to have speedometers and tell you how fast you're going. I mean, there's a lot of times when you're running into a area where you don't know the speed. It'd be nice if, I guess in this case, music helping you slow down, sure.
Kind of seems like, though, the people that might actually, you know, benefit from using this probably would choose not to. Right?
Perhaps.
Some people probably think, I hate it when I look up and I accidentally am start going over the speed limit. But those people look up and pay attention and probably need it less than the people who would not use the app.
This just seems like a great thing for pranks, you know, just messing with people's phones.
Yeah, totally.
And it's just like, what's going on?
Here, I'll set up the music on your phone for you. Don't worry. All right, on to the calendar. Chrome Store possibly launching tomorrow, December 7th. Google has an announcement at 10:30 a.m. We will cover it live on Twit. If you're listening to this before 10:30 a.m. Pacific on December 7th, you can check it out, find out what they announce, whether it's a new Chrome OS, a new Chrome OS netbook, or just a Chrome web store. We'll find out tomorrow. Also tonight at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern time, World of Warcraft Cataclysm launches, and you will not see any of your friends who play World of Warcraft for the next week. You got either one of you guys play, right, World of Warcraft?
I've got into StarCraft. No World of Warcraft, though. I want to make sure to keep my addiction small.
All right. So you guys can do the show for me tomorrow? That's great. rumor out that a Mac App Store will launch on December 13th. That's based on some instructions given to developers who are submitting their apps to the App Store that they have to be ready by the 6th. Tomorrow morning, an actual launch of a rocket. December 7th at 9:03 a.m., SpaceX's Falcon rocket is set to launch from Cape Canaveral. This will be the first of three planned tests of the rocket that will replace the space shuttle. It's one of two companies with rockets replacing the space shuttle. And we still need your nominations for the best parts of TNT this holiday season. It's for one of our year-end episodes. We're going to do a best of. So if you found a portion of the show very entertaining, find that portion, find that video, send the link and the time code when it happened. And all you got to do is go to twit.tv/bestof to submit that. Or you can just email TNT at twit.tv. But the form is nice. It tells you everything we need to know. And there's also the other show that we're doing with guests.
That's right. Open mic. And the details for that are at bit.ly/TNT holiday 2010.
Let's go to the phones. 260-TNT-SHOW. On the line is Bruce. Actually, he's not on the line. This is a voicemail. But here's what he said.
Jason and whoever else is there. This Bruce, Mr. Gadsden, Kansas City, just got finished listening to Friday's show.
fine for them to talk about commercials on TV. They don't have any bloody commercials on TV, do they? I'm not going to listen to some Englishman tell me about how loud commercials are on TV as far as the socialist aspect of the government controlling how loud our commercials are on TV. Please get a real socialist, i.e. Patrick or some of the French guys. Thanks, bye.
Okay.
Nice.
Okay, they do have commercials in the UK. You realize this.
Sky,
it's just
right?
Not, yeah,
Sky.
Well, Channel 4 and there's an ITV. They all have commercials. It's only the BBC channels that don't have commercials. And then the BBC has those little, you know, things between shows. Those could get loud.
The bumpers.
Now on BBC Two, gardening or whatever.
Punch in the face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm a little distracted right now because the chat room is pointing out that they've delayed the launch of the SpaceX Falcon no earlier than Thursday, or actually no earlier than Wednesday, according to this. The delay is because of a crack in the engine nozzle on the rocket's second stage that they found during a routine review. So no launch Tuesday morning. The next launch opportunity for the Falcon would be Wednesday, but it looks like maybe Thursday is when they'll check it out. But yeah, spaceflightnow.com actually has a great article, and thanks to the person who gave me that, Mike E. Atlanta, in the chat room for the update. All right, let's move on to the email. This one comes from Robert. Robert Moffat says, a couple other factors that make American cell phones more expensive regarding your Friday show. Number one, more towers. Except for major cities, the rest of America has a lot fewer people per square kilometer than Europe. So it takes more hardware and more wire to cover the same number of people and recoup the cost of the network. Number two, legacy legislation and laws in effect as the industry grew. I know in my state that carriers originally had to bid to each individual county to be a carrier there. Taxes were so high in my county in the 1980s that there were a lot of towers right at the county lines to provide coverage without having to pay the extra tax. And there are 90-some counties in Indiana, so that's 90-some separate contracts. And some counties had exclusives with particular service providers, so everyone else was roaming when in that county. Do you buy these? That's interesting. I didn't know about the county thing.
Yeah, the color of the – I hadn't thought of that before. I mean, cable companies for a really long time had to contract with lots of municipalities, and that's where things like cable access came from. That angle of cell phone having to in contract with each county, that's pretty insane. I mean, I don't buy that that's why American cell phone service is more expensive because, there's not – despite the population being less dense, there's still not towers in the middle of nowhere. If you're driving on major highways, you have coverage, but not other places. I mean, but I appreciate that little bit of knowledge that about the history of cell phones for sure.
Yeah, thanks for that, Robert. Appreciate you.
Yeah.
We only got time for one more email. Iaz, do you mind reading it?
Sure. We got a letter from John, or email from John at Jacksonville, Florida. Hello, TNT crew. I just listened to TWiT episode 277. Now, I know it was TWiT, not TNT. It threw me for a second listening to Tom Merritt, but I think the food tubes are a brilliant idea.
Yeah, and so we talked about a story of a company, I think it's in London, that wants to create tubes underground using the same sort of pattern that's used to switch packets on the internet to send capsules full of food to supermarkets and government buildings.
John continues, and I think we can take it one step farther. If they are able to take the internet packet switching process and apply it to these tubes, why not have maybe a 6-inch pipe go to everybody's house? We already have all the water and sewage and electrical. What's one more? Now, obviously, it's extremely expensive, but if I can sit down at my laptop after looking at my fridge, fill out my grocery list and hit send, and my entire grocery order arrives within an hour's time, I think it's worth spending a couple of bucks to pay for it. I'd spend that in gas for the car anyway. Just a thought.
So do those that grocery order, does it arrive in pieces, like one item at a time, or
a banana?
No, it's a capsule.
It's got
a capsule.
One large parcel.
Yeah exactly. It's that's better a gigantic than Cosmo or Webvan.
I mean, we can't even get fiber to the curb. There's no way we're going to get these 6-inch pipes just everywhere.
Food pipes to the curb.
Hopefully there's no filtering.
Well, and what would be great is if your refrigerator that's now connected to the internet, because that's what they're always trying to do is force internet connections into refrigerators, would just order the capsule itself.
Yeah, have a little compartment for your fresh food. It would just show up. All of a sudden you open your fridge. It's magic.
Yeah. Food Tubes. Love that. Food Tubes proposal for London's Croydon Borough. I'm probably mispronouncing that, but it's Croydon. Thank you guys for helping fill in today. Really appreciate it. Randall Bennett, let folks know where they can find you on the internet.
So I'm at vidplusplus.com. That's a blog I'm doing. I'm also at Randall B on Twitter. And of course, my day job is Castfire. It's a video hosting platform.
And Ayaz Akhtar, tell everybody about your new job at PC Mag.
I'm a features writer over at PC Mag. I get to write all kinds of silly things like slideshows. So check those out. Those are out pretty much every week at PC Mag. You can also go check out This Old Nerd. I still do that show. Video show that shows you how to have the most tech-forward life possible. ThisOldNerd.com.
All right. Thank you guys both again. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can give us a call. Our number is 260-TNT-SHOW. And you can email us, TNT@twit.tv. We'll see you tomorrow.